I've been exercising for a couple weeks now, Rob.
Yeah, you must be feeling good.
Three or four times in Virginia Beach. I think I only have a one. I know there's like a rating 1 to 100, like how accurate your duper could be. I'm pretty sure I'm a 1, but my duper's still pretty good. It's like 6'3 or 6'4. I think that's good. I'm not even really sure.
So low reliability, but high duper. I like it.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So it was fun getting some games in Virginia Beach. Kind of some of the teams were looking for men's games, and there were some alternates there. AJ Kohler, Roscoe Bellamy, Wyatt Stone, and the Ranchers GM, Ryan DeWidgeon. So also there's, I believe, Carlos DeLora is coaching the Slice. He's pretty good. He's pretty good. So there was a handful of good players out there and some legit games going. Steve Deacon, coach of the Night Owls. So we were able to get some play in. And you know, I was 4-5-ish a month ago. I think I'm a legit 5-0 right now.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary. Look how we made it this far.
Sometimes it just works out perfectly with AJ, but he can be slightly distracting at times. So hey, Prof, bring him over. We're gonna start him out early. Get him his 15 seconds, and then you guys are gonna move to a different room. That would be ideal.
Let's just open. Would be ideal.
There he is. There's my guy. Say hello, Mr. AJ. There you are, Mr. AJ.
AJ. There you AJ. Oh, he's got the immediate smile. My gosh.
Oh, cheesing. He's cheesing.
My God, dude. He's got the.
Atta boy.
He's got the Braves colors on.
Oh, yeah. All right, perfect. AJ, well done. AJ. Yeah, the Braves. So it was a wild situation yesterday. So if either team swept, the Mets or the Braves, the Diamondbacks would have been in. And if they split, then it's all good. And didn't you guys scratch Chris Sale? So Chris Sale, best pitcher in the league, and he had some back spasms of some sort, and you still got it done in the second game. Good for you.
Well, second game was kind of a little bit of a joke. Like, Mets don't care now, right? Like, they want to rest their guys. Right. They're not gonna press too hard. So, and that was going to go both ways. Whoever won that first game, that second game was going to be the kind of the B squad. But, I mean, 3-0 second game to get a shutout's big.
Yeah, how much cursing was going on by the Diamondbacks?
Oh,
you know,
dude.
when you pull your starter, you pull your best two players, or I don't even know what happened, but something like that. It makes sense. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Like, what? Once you seal it, you have to do what you can to be best.
Especially
for that
since
next series.
The series starts today. Like, the Braves are playing in San Diego today. So, like, you have to
–
especially – dude, it's a unique situation. Doubleheader day before the playoffs actually start.
Yeah, super super interesting. And I mean, that's what – hey, I mean, how much do we talk about you need it to mean something for pickleball? That's exactly what you got yesterday in baseball. So, you know, it's we got to talk about the standings. We just had MLP Virginia Beach. We got to talk about the playoff picture. We got to talk about the year-end championships for the PPA. This is the kind of stuff in the storylines that needs to be talked about more.
Yeah.
I did a little Twitter thing about improving the broadcast or what I can do, and that was probably the biggest thing was tell us what it means more often and build that intensity and suspense.
Yeah, because I think on the broadcast, it's – There has to be a very different level of commentary in MLP than there is in PPA, right? PPA is kind of a little, I mean, there's some ongoing story, sure, but MLP, that is the story. Like, that is the only story that really matters. And like, just pulling up the standings right here, and this is like one thing that annoyed me a little bit about trying to follow like what everything means is for each individual stop in MLP, the standings, it says season standings, but it's not the season standings. It's just that event standings. So you're seeing how they're performing in that event, and you're seeing points per match, which is a good column to have on there. But I don't care what happened in Virginia Beach. I care about where it stands in the overall season picture of what everything means, right? Because the Hard Eights went 4-2, but where does that put them overall in the season? Because I don't care about what they did in Virginia Beach, because that doesn't matter. So scrap all of the individual standings for each event, and just, you should only have a large one standings, and that's the season long standings, because that would be like the Braves going out west for a 6-game road trip, playing San Francisco and then playing San Diego, and only having those results in the standings list. And that's crazy.
Right. So it's like the main tab is the individual event, and then you have to go up and kind of search through a little bit and find the overall standings. It should be reversed.
Yeah.
So that's what should hit you in the face is the year long standings, and then you if you want to go look at a specific event, then that's where you can go.
Sure.
I do agree with that. And it was kind of a wild weekend. So I think there was, I mean, it was all Challenger, and I'll just say the fan base was not out in force. It got a little bit better on the weekend, but the stands were never really packed for this event, all Challenger. But a big chunk of the overall season schedule was during this event. I mean, there was a lot of teams there, a lot of matches played. The SoCal Hard Eights played 7, and there was usually what happens, and we'll talk about some MLP trades a little bit later, is usually as the season progresses and teams get out of it, there's really some significant have and have nots, where there's a couple teams that are cellar dwelling, and then there's a couple teams, handful of teams that are going for it. So there were some upsets, and the Pandas and the Frisco Pandas and the Florida Smash a little bit lower in the standings, but they did some spoiling, and they had some big wins. And right now it looks to be a 3-team race up at the top, with Miami Pickleball Club, the SoCal Hard Eights, and the Chicago Slice vying for 2 spots for an automatic bid to Premier League next year, which is a huge deal.
Yeah, and I'm just looking here at the league standings, which, yeah, they're still like ranking by points won. You have to rank by points per match, right? Like,
correct. And we're getting more to a point where everyone's pretty close with the matches that they played.
Yeah,
but it's been lopsided throughout. So total points don't really work when one team's played 15 matches and one team's played 9, you know, points per match is where it's at. And you have Miami Pickleball Club at first with 1.94.
Yeah.
SoCal Hard Eights 1.90, and then the Slice at 1.89. And then there's a bit of a dip before a pocket of other teams that are a little bit lower. So 6 teams make the playoffs, top 2 get bye and automatic bids to Premier. And of course, you get 3 points for a win in regulation, 2 points for a win in a Dream Breaker, 1 point for a loss in a Dream Breaker, and 0 points for a standard loss. So,
what's going on with my boys over at the California Black Bears?
They are at the bottom at 0.75 points per, and they did a little something something with some trades. And usually I always associate everything to fantasy baseball, and that's what happens. I'm in a dynasty league, which means you get to carry over some percentage of your roster. So what happens when you're out of it, you sell your expensive veterans and you try to get cheap young talent. Here in MLP, there seems to be a lot of cash considerations. So, that has happened in Premier, most notably with the Utah Black Diamonds, and it's happened a little bit in Challenger as well, where you know, maybe you're not going to keep a particular player for the next year. You ship them off, give another team a better chance to win, and you get something back, which here is cash.
Got it. Can you walk us through, because that's quite a few of these deals that I'm seeing. For people that don't know, what does that mean? Like, if a player is, let's say, Jeannie Arequina is traded for Andrea Coop plus cash considerations, like, what does that mean to the average fan?
Okay, yeah, I need to pull up and find the MLP trades, because there was like 5 of them. So I remember. Okay. I can't find it.
Well, outside of the specifics, like what does the cash consideration aspect mean?
So you're basically say a team is still in the mix, one team isn't, what you do is you send a better player for a lesser player on paper, and the team that is sending the better player over gets that lesser player, plus they get cash. They basically flat out get cash. I mean, there was one earlier, I believe it was $100,000 and something for Pablo Tellez, and that happened in Premier earlier, and Pablo was sent to the Brooklyn Aces, which is a challenger team. So the Brooklyn Aces sent a lesser player to the Texas Ranchers, and the Texas Ranchers gave them Pablo, but they also gave cash was given from the Brooklyn Aces. I know it's a bit confusing.
But are we talking real dollars and cents here?
Absolutely. Flat out money. So what
makes that make sense in this league at this point? Like in terms of, none of these teams are making money, right? Like there's shock me if they were. Like, help me understand why you would send $100,000 to another team when your team's, especially when it's like a Pablo for, like, we're talking Challenger League. Like, why do it?
Well, it's of course it is to, right now we have the Challenger and the Premier Division, and you know, the rules have changed a lot throughout Major League Pickleball, and that isn't ideal, but I kind of think it's part of it. You know, we're trying to find that perfect blend of what the right rules are, what the right format is. You know, went from 21 to 25, you couldn't win on serve, or you could lose when you were returning. Now you can't do that. You have to win on serve. So there's been tweaks to it. So teams are trying to get better in Challenger to move up to Premier, possibly for the 2025 season. And also just, yeah, a lot of this is for future value or money that you can make later. So having a team that has had some success, and also we've talked about the teams posted up in one location and kind of growing a fan base from that city. So yeah, sure. I would say in the exact now, there is less benefit than what could be for future with having your team known, with having them have success when we possibly get a TV deal or some more fan base that is buying merchandise and these kind of things. So it's kind of just creating a franchise that is more known in the pickleball community and has the ability to maybe monetize that down the road. Okay. That's my best explanation. Sure. I'm sure you're gonna poke at me again.
No.
Put me on the hot seat.
I'm just actually curious on. Yeah, the thought process, and maybe that's a better question to have a guest on, like a Samin or somebody, to walk through.
Sure.
Why that makes sense in their eyes, or why one of these teams would give up cash at this point when cash isn't coming in.
Right. And some teams are just like in, you know, the big three sports or whatever. Some teams are a little more frugal and you know, aren't willing to spend. And some teams are, you know, willing to spend and throw some money at making their team better for those possible, you know, future earnings. So there's very different ways to be a team owner and have your organization known for. And, you know, there's a handful of teams you really want to be a part of as a player. You get treated yeah. better, treated right. And the team is willing to put some money down to win. And there's other teams that aren't really willing to do that. And maybe they're a bit more along for the ride than really making strong moves out there, trying to win at all cost.
Yeah. What was you know, have not been in the mix with MLP at the event or anything like that. So what's the general sentiment right now of, you know, cause this week you have Virginia Beach PPA progression draw. I think they've got some rain today and tomorrow, it looks like. So probably a wash for these 2 days, but what's the general sentiment of MLP right now amongst the players, amongst the GMs, the owners, versus what's happening with PPA? Like where does that stand in terms of the two coexisting?
I mean, the like I said, this for this MLP Virginia Beach, it was much lower, but the product and the ticket sales at some of the previous stops, especially MLP New York, was really good. And there's actually going to be a meeting somewhat soon in the next month or so about some financials which will be, you know, all the team owners and the representatives will be there and talking about, you know, just ticket sales and merchandise sales, pairing up with how much it is to run these tournaments and this and that. And so I think that will clear up some things in terms of direction. And, you know, I think still, you know, one of the main goals is to possibly get a TV deal at some point that would, you know, help, you know, offset some of the costs. I honestly don't really know how far along we are in that process and what some of the numbers say about these events in terms of viewership. But yeah, that's, you know, I probably in my role should know a little bit more about that, but that's more of an owner thing.
Yeah.
I'm more focused on the team and the coaching and you know, some of the waiver wire action and the draft that already happened, of course. So, I mean, yeah, there's been very, very good events in terms of viewership on site, and there's been some that have been lessered, and that depends on the location and you know, some of the marketing and the, you know, ability to create a buzz about a certain event.
Yeah. It's interesting. Virginia Beach, smaller market, right? Where you would think that obviously less people to draw from. Crazy dogs.
Oh, good snap.
Less people to draw from in Virginia Beach, but you often see like the smaller markets really step up and show up, and because they don't get many events. So to be kind of their first premier event where they have not just MLP, but also a PPA, I would have thought that they would have rallied around a little bit more. But I think it's very dependent on it. I don't feel like that's so dependent on, well, I guess in this case it is. I'm just thinking like to Bristol. Like Bristol really promoted it themselves internally. Like they got the city involved. They put on different experiences and events for the players. If you don't have somebody on the ground doing that at each location, one, I think MLP has to do it if there's not like a champion on the ground, or PPA has to do it. But I think the small market to me is like, I think it's epic. I think it's great. It brings pickleball to a new spot, but you do need somebody there to kind of like rally the troops and get the local community involved.
Rob, you always need boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground. It always comes back to that.
It does. And now I think Beer City Open did a great job of that. I know that they have a great community there, and I know that MLP has promoted every single event, but it's the local community that can take that to the next level in terms of creating that buzz in their location. Hey, now we got, hey, two kids on the broadcast. Ooh. One human, one dog. Look at that.
This is Munch.
That's the little guy creating all that noise. Yeah. Munch, come on, man.
It's Munch and Finn, named after the two detectives in Law and Order SVU. Very important.
Oh,
very important keynote there.
That's right.
This is Mr. Munch.
Okay. Well, thanks for bringing him on. I appreciated that. That's a good chat about the MLP and just kind of that whole process. And yeah, I think it's far from a finished product and what is the perfect recipe to have the viewership, whether it's live and in person or on the streams. I don't think it's perfectly figured out yet, but that's how it goes.
Well, I think it's just a good note to maybe pull on somebody from an ownership perspective. Maybe it's a Tim Parks. I don't know what old Tim's up to these days. How's Tim doing?
Crack open a bottle of wine and just get Rick Chan and Tim Parks to start talking about stuff. And then you'll get a lot of information about the business side of things. They were both there. Rick nice. Chan was there the whole time. He's a gosh darn champion, man. He treats the players so well. He's got a great energy. He's always looking to help out even some old Hard Eights players or players that we possibly dropped and replaced on the waiver wire. He is always there to help out and lend a helping hand. And I think that it's definitely the best ownership group in the league. Maybe someone can argue with me there, but I'm pretty,
it sounds
pretty
like,
stuck
it sounds
with
like
that
they,
statement.
It sounds like they pay you.
Yes, they do. They do. There's a little Hard Eights love right there. Thank you, Corinne, for framing that for me. Tim popped in. He had to leave a little bit early. Some, you know, business stuff, and you know, a lot of these guys
are
finance.
A wine event in Napa or what?
Wine event. Yeah, right. Exactly. So he had to go to his, I think he's got like 3,000 bottles of wine over in France somewhere. So he had to go, man, he had to go tend to that.
Last time I was at Tim's, he had there's some master sommelier there staying with him as well. And like doing some like, you know, fancy schmancy, you know, wine tasting event in New York.
Yeah, no, it was great having them there. And he always tells us an ASAP Rocky story because ASAP Rocky lives underneath them. So there's always good stuff when those two are around. And I guess it's my bad for not, you know, cracking open an extra bottle of wine and getting some more information for them about the business side of things.
Adam, speaking of popping open some wine, I'm hosting these. I haven't opened it yet, but I've got a little community I'm starting called Nunnery's Pickleball Lab. And
oh my.
And every Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon, haven't decided which yet, about 5 p.m. Eastern, gonna have either some wine, an IPA, something, but with myself and another you or a pro, gonna probably rotate. We're just gonna crack open some wine, have some, you know, talk some wine notes and tastings and talk picky. So
yeah, well, that helps the flow.
Right up your alley is all I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I mean, it just helps the flow. You know, you work up a little friendly, a friendly buzz with your pal, and, you know, sometimes the topics get better and sometimes
they go off,
you know, the threshold that you're willing to go over is, you know, extended. So it's only good things can happen there. Right.
Yeah. It could be, I've thought my buddy used to have a podcast that was like, kind of like Hot Ones, but not, you know, Hot Ones, like with the wings, you go like in order from, you know, the least hot to like fiery hot. And his was whiskey shots.
Oh, baby.
And it was like 10, and it was podcast style. So you just went down the line. But needless to say it won't be that, but, it will be fun.
That sounds like a good way to get canceled. 10 is a lot, Rob. You know, you're going to be saying some 10 whiskey shots. My goodness.
Yeah.
I've been pulling back a little bit on the alcohol consumption. Haven't stopped, but I've been pulling back a little bit, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but I haven't checked a bag since probably 2005. So I'm going on 20 years of no check bags. I only carry on. And what's made that really easy for me over the past couple years are Selkirk backpacks. Because little do people know, you get a personal item in a carry-on on most carriers. And both items are big backpacks. I carry them on. I fill both of them to the brim. And they both count as carry-on. I don't have to check a bag. It's important.
No, I'm right there with you. And that's the big boy. And I am past my playing days. So I do one big boy and one little smaller fella here that I can take with me from the hotel to the venue every single day. Leave the big boy there. Don't check bags. Get yourself some Selkirk gear. Small, medium, big. You need it.
I don't have the small. I need the small. Somebody send me the small. I can put my little laptop and I don't have to take the big one. It's important. Selkirk, send me a small. I'll buy it.
Let's see what else happened. MLP Virginia Beach. The Breakers made a nice run. That is Elise Jones, Jillian Braverman, Colin Schick, who got onto SportsCenter, I believe number 5. And he actually could have been on again. He had a disgusting behind the back, but it hit the court on his side before it went over. So he could have had two SportsCenter opportunities, and they picked up Martin Emrich, who has really solidified the team, and they've kind of had a little back and forth with some roster turnover. So they made a nice run and are in playoff contention now. The Night Owls, which the ladies have been solid throughout the year, Judith Castillo, Zoe Wong, but there's been big turnover on the guys' side as Mo Alhouni and Anderson Scarpa were dropped for Rafa Hewitt and Blaine Hovenier, and they have not been getting the results they were hoping for with that switch. So I believe the Night Owls are on the outside looking in, and the Slice in Miami playing some good ball along with the Hard Eights, as I mentioned. Jack Monroe looked really good, and that's a little segue over to you, Rob, as I know you're playing some APP tournaments with him for the rest of the year. He looked a little bit more confident doing his damn annoying ambidextrous stuff when he gets in trouble and somehow gets himself out of it. But the hands were looking good. The decision-making was good. And then I would say probably on paper, their bottom two players, Allison Harris and Brendan Long, played very well this tournament. And so it's going to be a fun last two events in Miami and Las Vegas to see which of those top three teams can get that automatic bid.
Yeah, I think Brendan's the key on that team. If he's able to stay, held together and not pull too quickly, you know, mm-hmm. they're going to be very, very tough if he can, stay a little bit more patient.
Yeah. Brendan's default is to send it. That's for sure. Yeah. So sometimes he gets in trouble with that, but when he's hot, he's hot. So, and really Allison Harris too, just some, I believe at previous events, maybe didn't play her best game or had some holes, and those have been cleaned up pretty nicely. She's scrappy from the midcourt. She's not missing her roll drops and her roll dinks near as much as she was. And she's playing a really nice second girl for the Chicago Slice. So there's some good things to like for both of those teams, all of those teams.
Yeah.
So also saw Florida Smash, they picked up Donald Young. And I think Donald and Travis are comfortable with each other because they were doing quite a bit of chirping throughout this tournament. So heavy crap talk and getting under the skin of many opponents.
That's great.
And when Donald hits the ball well, my God,
I mean,
it comes off the paddle with a lot of life, forehand and the backhand side. He's kind of figuring it out on the fly. He even had a talk with Travis Rettenmeyer, and you know, he's running around his backhand at the kitchen and hitting forehand dinks one match. The next match, he's hitting all backhand dinks. Like he's not quite sure what he's doing out there, but the talent is in the paddle. So if he ever fully goes for it, commits with training and also the mental aspect of the game, watch out for that guy. Yeah. I think he could be like a legit, you know, top 20 or top 25 guy if he puts it all together.
Yeah, he's crazy talented with his hands. Interesting to see. I'm just looking through some of the player standings on the year. And obviously you have, I mean, it's showing 56 total because obviously we've had, you know, pickups and drops and trades and premier to challenger. But just some interesting numbers like Blaine Havenir, 49, ranked 49, 6-18 record. I'm trying to see some players that are currently playing. Tammy Emmerich, 17-21. Rafa Hewitt, 18-34. I think people would be surprised by that, right?
Yeah, he actually has more matches than he should because the Black Bears played a bunch with him on their team and then they traded him. So he will actually have over what the maximum could be if you were just staying on one team. So, yeah, I think it's hilarious that Rachel Retger got dropped and she's still at the top of the standings from a percentage perspective at 10-2 from that first event.
Too good.
But yeah, there is some usual suspects that you would expect, but there are some ones on there as well that, you know, definitely I think that's more surprising to me than who's at the top is some of the players that are at the bottom from a percentage perspective.
Yeah.
So a lot goes into it. You have a partner and you know, a bad event can really tank some of the numbers. But yeah, there's a lot going on there.
A lot of it is especially very, very partner dependent, you know, like
of course.
So it's not like you're looking at singles results, right? And you're like, this is the person, this is the level, this is where they're at. It's skewed to, it might be based on who your mixed partner is, might be based on you guys not gelling, men's partner, whatever. But the team dynamic matters a lot.
Yeah, and the top players drafted get the shorter end of the stick also, because that means that their partners are drafted lower, the higher that they are drafted. That's just how it works. So if you're a very high rated player, sure, you have some great talent, but you do have some partner issues at times. So,
and challengers interesting because if you know, the ones that are pulled pretty high, you know, we're not talking like these, they're drafted high because they're obviously very good, but they're not, at this level, at that level, they're not dominant. You know what I mean? They're not going to dominate and carry a team like you would see more so in Premier with like the top five on each side. So Challengers is a little different in terms of like those top five. Like the parity's there.
Right. And it's not surprising. Granted, they're very good players, but I see, you know, in the top 12 here, you have Bobby Oshiro, Yana Newell, Noe Cleef, and Megan Fudge. And those are all players who are talented, but they were added to a team. So they are added, plus they're playing with some pretty good partners because they were replacing like the fourth player or something like that.
I mean, Fudge and Allison Harris would never happen in a draft. You know what I mean?
Right. So granted, they're very good players, so not surprising to see them at the top, but they're partnered with very good players also, which makes it even better for their point differential percentage and some of their games won.
Harris? Well, that might have been a draft, no?
Fudge was picked up. So I kind of want to say Kelsey Grambo was on the slice for the first tournament with Allison Harris. And then, you know, Kelsey Grambo, I mean, only one event. It's a small sample size, but she did not have great results. Yeah. So to plug in Megan Fudge, which I believe would be a first round talent and challenger, is very nice. And of course, it's not surprising. Yana Newell, same situation, absolute stud. We were able to pick her up. And then Bobby Oshiro to Miami Pickleball Club. I don't think it's a huge coincidence that those three teams are battling for the top, given that they got that infusion of talent at some point of the season, not in the draft.
Yeah.
There we go.
Cool.
It's fun to look at numbers.
What's next, Adam, for MLP?
What's next for MLP? So there is, I actually believe that the first event is Las Vegas. So the SoCal RDA, it's only 23 regular season matches. We only have three left. And there is a couple teams close to us that have five. So you have Las Vegas, and then you have Miami. The SoCal Hard Eights are only playing in Las Vegas, and some other teams are only playing in Miami. So there's going to be some fun sweats, and I'm going to be definitely watching the streams in that Miami event to hopefully one of these lower teams can play spoiler and help us out a little bit.
I mean, you guys are pretty much guaranteed in, right? Top four?
Yeah. Top six top make six. The playoffs. So we're pretty much guaranteed. I haven't looked at the numbers. There might be a possibility if everything went awry that we could not make it. But having that top two spot not only is an automatic bid to Premier, but you actually don't have to play a round of the playoffs. So it's massive. And there's also you get better picks about, you know, reacting to mixed and those things that are huge in Major League Pickleball. So I do like that they're rewarding this big chunk of the regular season for the teams that do well in it.
Yeah.
So it's a huge deal to finish in one of those top two spots.
Yeah. And you guys, there's a three team battle up there. So
Right. So, and then of course, and then, so there's the battle for the top two spots. And then there's also the battle kind of lower to make the top six. So there's some, and I hope on the broadcast we can mention it a lot, because there are some huge ramifications for these matches in MLP Las Vegas and MLP Miami.
I think the one challenge on the broadcast side is it's pretty complex, and there's a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of things to keep up with and track in terms of like what matters in each match. You know, Challenger alone, and then you add in Premier to the mix. And, you know, if you have Premier and Challenger at the same event, it just, from a broadcast perspective, it's got to be very, very challenging to track all of that, no?
Yeah, and I think that the issue is the consistent changes. So I think there's a lot of complex point systems in a variety of other sports, but it's been that way for a long time. So the longer it's set in stone, the easier it is for the fans to figure it out. But when it's pretty fluid and there's changes happening every 3 months, 6 months, or a year, then that makes it that's a lot. That is a lot. So I completely agree with you. And the fact that it hasn't been solidified for very long with this format makes it doubly difficult for the non, you know, junkies that are watching almost every single event and every single match to figure out.
I will give a shout out to Eric Tice with the Dink. He's been doing a really, really good job of kind of documenting what's happening, what everything means, the trades, the standings. So big shout out to him. I mean, that's that he must be a junkie because he spends a lot of time on digging into a lot of stuff that I would never take the time to do. But big props to him on doing a great job of making MLP make sense and giving the fans an idea of, like, you know, where everything stands.
Could not agree more. So, and that's, I mean, that's that, that, I mean, that's super important stuff. And I'm actually going to look up. Okay, so let's go over the trades. Let's do that. Yep. So we have five trades. So the Columbus Sliders acquire Cali Smith and the Utah Diamonds acquire Andrea Coop and cash considerations. So basically what the teams are saying is that Cali Smith is more valuable than Andrea Coop. So there is some extra money. Don't know, have that dollar value attached with Andrea to make that switch. So Utah pretty much out of everything with their points per match. So they're looking to acquire cash and give away some of their more talented team members. So that makes a lot of sense. So the Brooklyn Aces acquire Andrea Coop for Lena Padigameta and cash considerations. So according to trade number two, Andrea Coop is more valuable than Lena Padigameta. So there is Lena and cash for that trade. So the Aces are a challenger team. The Black Diamonds are a premier team. So the Aces are looking to go for it and acquire Andrea Coop. This makes a lot of sense also. Utah Black Diamonds, again, getting money. But I think that makes sense given where they are in the standings.
Yeah.
Trade number three is the Black Bears acquire Lena Padigameta and the Utah Diamonds acquire Jeannie Irakina in cash consideration. So once again, there's three trades there where the Black Diamonds are trying to acquire cash for their talent.
Yeah.
Trade four, this is kind of just a straight up trade where it's the Arizona Drive acquire Jesse Irvin and the Carolina Pickleball Club acquire Caitlin Christian. And what this does is I believe it makes the Arizona Drive a little bit better at doubles, which is Andre Deescu, Dylan Frazier, and now Jesse Irvin and Lacey Schneeman. And those all have connections too, because Jesse and Lacey are buddies from Southern California. So the Drive are trying to get better at doubles and the Carolina Pickleball Club is trying to get better at singles. So they have Colin Johns, Ben Johns, Brooke Buckner, and now Caitlin Christian. So basically they have two of the best singles girls. They have Ben and they have Colin, who's competent, not fantastic at singles. I think it makes a lot of sense for them as well to get possibly slightly worse at doubles, but get better at singles. And then the last trade number five is the Sliders, after acquiring Cali Smith, they have overhauled their females. They acquire Paris Todd from the Orlando Squeeze for Megan Dazan and cash. So this trade is valuing Paris Todd more than Megan. And Megan has some cash attached to her to send over to the Orlando Squeeze. Any thoughts about any of those?
No, not really. I think the Arizona Drive one's interesting to me. Obviously, Carolina's trying to get better at singles. Interesting, Caitlin Christian. Like, she's been around. Adam, we talk about that singles match I played with Tyler Leung back at the California Open in March 2020, right before COVID hit. And that's, like, the first time I saw Caitlin Christian play. And she was playing tennis, I think, full-time then. And she had maybe won women's singles. But she's played a long time, but she's really just gotten, you know, full on into it last year or so, I would say. And obviously one of the best singles players, really, really talented at singles, has done very well in PPAs. She's close homies with Christine McGrath, Trifunovic, which is an interesting dynamic when you look at Carolina and having team chemistry meaning a lot in MLP. So that's just an interesting connection to see how that seeps in, or if it does, or if it doesn't, or if it's, you know, that's some of the more finer nuances in MLB.
Yeah, well, yeah, she better be a tough cookie because sometimes over on Carolina, it's not the most
not
camaraderie.
The best energy.
Raw, not the best energy. Not everyone has their different styles, but I think that multiple people have brought that up about the Carolina Pickleball Club. So, there's always some intermingled this and that. I know them. I know this happened. This situation happened. So, you know, people. You know, traveling together, you know, playing together, partnering together, there's always some form of dynamics at play when you're talking about a team event, especially when you have four or three teammates instead of one teammate like you do at a standard tournament. So, you got to factor it all in. It really does matter, especially when those physical edges are getting thinner and thinner every month that goes by. So. I think it does make sense on paper, and I guess they're just kind of really hoping to get those two matches of Ben Johns and then have a quality Dreambreaker team once they get there. And Caitlin over Jesse is a massive upgrade in terms of singles play.
Yeah, we'll see if Christine will be on the bench with Caitlin.
I hope and pray that she is. So the old schoolers know, we don't need to say anything else besides for that. So let me see here.
Any trades that you thought should have happened, Adam, that didn't, or any, are there any more drops or ads, waiver wires, or no, it's just trades.
No, I think that's happening very soon though. I believe maybe even tomorrow is the last waiver wire period. It is absolutely. After Virginia Beach is the last waiver wire period. Virginia Beach has already happened. I don't know the exact day. I do believe it's Wednesday. So we'll see. I can't imagine premier teams doing anything, but I'm sure there'll be some shuffling on at least the bottom side of Challenger. But at the same time, when you add someone, you cannot keep them. You can keep three of your four players going into 2025. That's how the rule sits right now. But if you add someone from waiver wire, they're not keepable. So maybe there'll be less action than I think. So
interesting. Yep. So what's it look like post the season this year? So every team still has three of the players. They have to drop one.
You have to drop one. You can drop all of them if you want to and just go through the waiver wire process. But everyone that is dropped and, of course, the player pool that is not on a team, they'll make their own player pool and teams will be able to choose from that. So, So if of those three – so during the draft, there was a dollar value for Premier. It was an auction draft, not a snake draft. So whatever that player went for, say Annalee Waters went for 680,000 or draft points or whatever you want to call it, if the New Jersey Fives want to keep her for 2025, they have to pay the league half of that. So they would have to pay up $340,000 to keep Annalee Waters for 2025.
Got it.
The Challenger teams moving to Premier, the two Challenger teams moving to Premier, they don't have to pay anything to keep their players. It's just what it is. It's only the premier teams that have to pay. And like I said, all those leftover players that are not kept will go into a player pool, and then the premier teams will get to choose from that pool. So to fill out their roster, a lot of teams are going to keep their three, and I have a feeling some teams are going to keep less than their three and will take their chances on the waiver wire.
Interesting. I don't know if you've heard. There's a couple different team leagues popping up in India. One with Prawn and the pickleball. It's PWR team, and then there's a World Pickleball League, which is I suppose a competing league, also based in Mumbai. And they are both hosting their events in January. Both are going to be over the course of a condensed season of like 20 days or something like that. I think 10 days of playing. Maybe a little bit more, and you're looking at pretty good guaranteed money for talking pro pickleball. I think we mentioned 45K per player goes to the winner of the PWR team league. You're guaranteed 15K if you just get drafted and go over, they cover your travel. The World Pickleball League, which is, you know, both have non-competes, right? So for India. So if you play in PWR, you can't play any other team league in India. You're still fine for MLP Australia, whatever it may be. The World Pickleball League, if you play that, you cannot play the PWR Team League, but you can play the individual tournaments for PWR that they're going to be hosting.
Okay.
The $1 million in Spain, Dubai, Vegas, when those come up. So with the World Pickleball League, I think the winning team gets, there's six players on a team for that one. The winning team gets 100K. So that's split amongst the six players. And it sounds like it's four men and two women per team, six teams of six players for that one. Second place gets 50K. And then I don't think the other teams, the other four teams actually get anything in terms of prize money, but appearance fees and being on a team, I think those fees are all negotiable with the league. So interesting things happening. Lots of opportunities to play for everybody. So whether I'll be curious to see if any players from MLP go over or if everybody's committed to MLP.
No, I'm with you. I'm super fired up about the international scene. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic and more opportunities and more situations. I mean, I think it's better and best for the whole ecosystem. It all trickles down. It's all positive in my opinion. So it's very exciting. And I know that you're kind of in the mix and have some of those, India connections and are somewhat in the know. So I'm excited to continue to get updates from you about how all this is going. It's great. It's great.
Yep. And I think for both, there's going to be drafts in December. So you'll have a player pool. And I think for PWR, you just need to submit a letter of interest and you'll be under consideration. I think they're taking into account dupers and PWR points, which there's a few tournaments this year. I know they just wrapped up one. I believe it was in Hong Kong. They've got a big one coming up maybe this weekend in Delhi. I know there's a lot of Australian players going over there. Maybe some American players going too as well. And then they have, I believe, China and then Vietnam in December. So those are all PWR tourneys where you can get points. And it's interesting to see where APP is going to fall in this whole mix, man. It's like they're doing 50 events next year, but only 12 or 13, maybe 14 are pro tour level events. So it's kind of the same number as this year, which, dude, this year I've felt bored. Like it's, you know, I'm playing APP. I've played two tournaments in the last three months. It feels like it's just so infrequent that a couple things happen. One, when you have PPAs and MLPs going on very consistently and there's, one APP every couple months, it feels like at this point, you just lose recency bias, right, Adam? It's like you're out of sight, out of mind, and you kind of lose a little bit of that buzz that's important for social, for sponsors, et cetera. So I was a bit bummed that APP didn't really step up and do more events. I was hoping for at least 16 where, you're averaging, a bit more over one a month, but we'll see what happens, man. Players follow the money. So, if PWR events are happening at the same time and there's more prize money and more frequency, then, I think players are going to play it. And I think they're going to play it regardless of, the APP's carrot this year was, you play six and you get 1.5x prize money. You play 12, you get 2x prize money. I don't think players are going to necessarily care about that carrot so much next year because the prize money internationally is going to be so much better. So,
I mean,
it'll be interesting to see where players end up playing. I mean, none of it's exclusive.
Yeah.
PPA, right. MLP is really the only exclusive at this point if you're signed to the PPA contract. So outside of that, it's open game.
Right. Yeah. Maybe pair them together, handful of international events with the lower schedule. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out, but numbers don't lie. So everybody's going to kind of crunch it, see where they best fit in, where they can have the best results, but also, have the best, monetary situation for themselves and their family. So, hey, it's cool. It's cool to have options and to not know exactly where it's all going to trickle down to. But
And I think from a player's perspective,
bring on more.
From a player's perspective, it's international. I think should be super attractive to sponsors, right? It's getting your brand and your paddle and your apparel, whatever it is you sell, it's getting it in front of eyes of an international audience that is basically the US 5-6 years ago. So, you know, huge opportunity to grow in these international geos. And I think from an American player's perspective, that should be super interesting for sponsors looking to sign players.
Hey, like we say, Rob, there's a lot of people over there. So a lot of people over there, a lot of opportunity, and you're exactly right. You know, that's exposure. That's good for the personal brand and whoever could be sponsoring you. So, yeah. I mean, I've been exercising for a couple weeks now, Rob. So
yeah, you must like be feeling good.
Three or four times in Virginia Beach. I think I only have a one. I know there's like a rating 1 to 100, like how accurate your duper could be. I'm pretty sure I'm a 1, but my duper's still pretty good. It's like 6.3 or 6.4. I think that's good. I'm not even really sure.
So low reliability, but high duper. I like it.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. it was fun getting some games in Virginia Beach. Kind of some of the teams were looking for men's games, and there were some alternates there. AJ Kohler, Roscoe Bellamy, Wyatt Stone, and the Ranchers GM, Ryan DeWidgen. So also there's, I believe, Carlos DeLora is coaching the Slice. He's pretty good. He's pretty good. So there was a handful of good players out there and some legit games going. Steve Deacon, coach of the Night Owls. So nice. We were able to get some play in. And you know, I was 4-5-ish a month ago. I think I'm a legit 5-0 right now. So I'm moving in the right direction, Rob. You never know.
You have I'm just ready for Adam Stone to have a two-handed backhand deke.
No, I have the yips on my backhand right now. Like if you hit it as hard as you can at me or dink it to me, I'm fine. But everything in the middle, I just don't have it. It's very awkward and very, very, you know, not great. So
I think this is the time for your game to evolve. I think you try new shots, you try two-handed backhand counters, you do everything, you get weird.
It feels so awkward. I tried to dink a couple with two hands and hit some speed ups. Man, it is as awkward as it can possibly be.
Yeah.
Oh, Rob, this is going to be a quick tip.
Yep.
There's not a lot to add to it. You know, sometimes we go down a rabbit hole with some of the tips, and that's good. But this one, I saw a decent amount, and I saw it on my own team. Already, I've had some chats with it about the players. Is about overthinking the third shot drive and not going at the transitioner enough.
Yeah.
So when a player is returning, like you think the partner's going to protect, you think, hey, I've hit two or three drives at the person who just returned and they're coming forward, let me go with the other guy.
Yeah.
I think it has to be very specific situation. If the partner established at the kitchen line is overprotecting, which is rare, the person transitioning, then occasionally you do need to go behind them. But if they're kind of hanging out on their side, maybe just squeezing the middle a little bit and not doing much over there, take your third shot drive at the person that's transitioning forward.
Yeah.
When you are on the move, first volleys are extremely difficult. And when you are established at the kitchen line, you have your balance underneath you. It is much easier to hit a clean first volley.
Yeah. And I think also, like when you see that person in transition, you're like, okay, this is an opportunity. We've got them unwinding, and you know, you can sometimes go for too much on that drive. I like the little hybrid, you know,
yeah,
the little hybrid semi drive that dips at their feet. You're not going for too much. You're not going to overhit it. You're not going to miss it as much. I think, you know, going for that as well. But you're right, Adam. I think hitting person transition, sometimes you've gone two or three times at them, and you're like, okay, I'm going to go at the, you know, I'm going to try to catch the other guy. You don't want to go at the person right. That's stationary at the kitchen line. It's an easy volley.
That's right. Yeah, totally agree. And even we'll just say a full on hybrid drop drive is 50%. You can go 70 or 80% too to get a hint more spin and a little less pace moving through the court. Force that player to hit up on their first volley, and there's no better way to do that than to force them to hit the volley a couple feet off the kitchen line, and that is not going to happen for a player that is already up there.
Yeah.
So that's what I got. I saw it quite a few times from a variety of teams at the challenger level. Don't overthink it. Notice if the situation calls for it in that specific instance, but otherwise just pepper the ball at the transitioning player.
And I think even more specific to dive into that a little bit more, not too much.
Oh, rabbit hole. Here we go.
It's not. It's an easy one. There's some players that, especially on the forehand side, have a pretty, not on the right side, but I mean, like for their forehand, they have a pretty, pretty extreme grip. Semi-Western, even close to Western. And they hate forehand volleys because that paddle face is so closed. It's real, like, so if you find somebody that you're playing that has a pretty aggressive forehand grip where they maybe have great rolls, hit good topspin on the forehand side, that grip's going to be really closed down on that forehand volley. So driving not only at the transition person, but if that person also has a forehand that's really closed on that volley, go to the right hip. Make them hit a really awkward forehand volley.
Yep. I'm on board with it. Notice those tendencies. And a grip is a good first place to look in that situation. So,
yeah.
All right, Robert.
Beautiful.
I think we're at a nice little 52 minutes. I think that is just the happy place.
I like at the end of the podcast where you always look at the minute, you always wrap it up with like, okay, we're at 52, 58, perfect place to stop. I love your closing recap.
Yeah, but I never know like quite what your caffeine intake is. Sometimes
this was a big cold brew. So
yeah. So sometimes you're right on point with me, and sometimes you want to talk about Caitlin Clark or talk about something else, which is okay. But I sometimes do feel like I need to bring you down, and I think this is the right time to do it, buddy.
Oh, hold on.
What's he getting? You got Indiana Fever something. Oh, here we go. Why did I open up this can of worms? What did I do to us? I apologize, viewers. We got Robert excited. There it is. What is that? Caitlin Effin Clark. There you go.
There
perfect.
Rookie of the year.
There it is.
Nobody thought she could do it this year. Everybody thought she was going to be a bomb. She's, you know, shattering records as a rookie. Most assists ever in a game. Assist record, WNBA, not rookie. Just destroying it and doing it when everybody's out to get her. So she is Michael Jordan. She's generational.
God.
If you haven't watched her play yet, watch the highlights of year one. There was just a 60 Minutes done on her. She's just an incredible player, incredible human. And it's going to be a long break without Caitlin Clark. So I'm glad you brought it up so I could get a little shout out.
I'm glad I did too. That we're at 54 minutes, but it was worth it. It was worth it, Rob.
All right.
And I also wanted to apologize for last week. That was a miscommunication on my part. I had to drive Tuesday morning to Virginia Beach. 100% my fault. I apologize to you, to Josh, the producer, and to our listeners and viewers. That's all I got to say. Out.
Apology accepted.